Summer is all about the outdoors, isn't it? Well, we'll start things off in Ontario, where Living History Museum has been nominated for Top Small Museum. It tells the story of 19th century Peterborough County.
What we have here is your typical garden that they would have had in the late 1800s. Yeah. So we have here radishes, which are very different radishes than what we would grow today. They're actually white and they're very, very strong.
We'll follow the Round the Lake Trail, one that is under construction on Hudson Bay Mountain in the BC Buckley Valley.
It starts at the same spot that the current Crater Lake Trail does, but it cuts back across toward the east, contouring around the mountain to above the top of the chairlift, and then up onto the prairie from there in the alpine. It's been designed to have a low-grade, smooth trail surface, so it'll be accessible for a lot of different trail users.
And we'll talk with an 11-year-old artist. Her name is Jola Williner. Her work will once again be shown at the 7th Annual Skeena Salmon Art Festival in Terrace, BC.
If you like look at my art from then to now, it's like completely changed a lot by just the sky and like the mountains and like the water and everything. So
welcome to Viewpoints, local news nationwide all summer long.
You are on the air with Viewpoints. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
Welcome to the show. Thanks for being here. Boris Chassin here with you for the next half hour. Our first stop will be just outside Peterborough, Ontario, to visit an unusual museum, one where you can find an authentic recreation of what a 19th century settlement would look like. It's the Lang Pioneer Village Museum, a kind of living history museum that tells the story of the beginnings of Peterborough County and what it might have looked like between the years 1825 to 1900. This year, the Lang Museum has been nominated for an award with Attractions Ontario in the Top Small Museum Art Galleries Historic Sites category. The 9th Annual Ontario Choice Awards voting period takes place from July 1st to September 8th. The Lang Pioneer Village consists of 41 historic buildings, and what makes Lang a living history museum are the staff and volunteers that populate the site, dressed in authentic historical attire, going about their daily chores. Edward Sweeney in Peterborough, Ontario, put his listening ears on and came back with this story.
Around 20 minutes outside of Peterborough, Ontario, you can find an authentic 19th century village at Lang Pioneer Village Museum, a living history museum located in Keene. For over 50 years, Lang Pioneer Village has been working to tell an accurate story about the development of Peterborough County. And this year, they've been nominated for Top Small Museum with Attractions Ontario.
What we have here is your typical garden that they would have had in the late 1800s. Yeah. So we have here radishes, which are very different radishes than what we would grow today. They're actually white and they're very, very strong. we're making seeds out of them now because that's all that we've got.
To learn more about this place of Peterborough history, Trent Radio went out to explore Lang Pioneer Village and to speak with the museum operations manager, Elizabeth King.
So Lang Pioneer Village Museum is a living history site museum where we tell the story of the history of Peterborough County. We generally represent 1825 to 1900. Now, with that being said, on special event days, and people ask questions sometimes about a little earlier and a little later, so I like to say that that's flexible. We talk about the people that settled here. We talk about the impacts that settlement had on the people that were originally here, and kind of everything in between, the history of the area.
So this here is the mini general store. We're set in 1899 in here, which means we get to be the most modern building, have all the nice new fancy things like roller skates and cameras that are just now hitting the market and becoming more available in places like Mini, which is where this store is from. But think very, very rural. This is the only store you're getting to within a day's drive on your horse and wagon, which meant we had to sell pretty much everything you could want or need. We're also your
post. Sure. So the museum itself has over 30 historic buildings. Some of them are reproductions. Some of them are original. I'd actually say most are original, but not original to the site. They've all been moved here from different parts throughout the county. And you see everything from like a homestead, cabin, that sort of thing, to businesses like a print shop, a schoolhouse. We have a blacksmith shop, a weaver shop, even a church. The only original building to the site is our grist mill, which is still an operating grist mill. We do still grind flour at special events. But yeah, it's a beautiful rural setting right along the banks of the Indian River. And we...
The Lang Pioneer Village Museum opened in 1967 with far fewer buildings and artifacts, but with the same goal that they have today, which is, according to their website, to preserve, promote, and authentically recreate the history of Peterborough County.
So the Lang Pioneer Village is owned and operated by the County of Peterborough. It has been since it opened in 1967. We're very fortunate that the county is a promoter and supporter of history and culture. So we do receive a significant portion of our funding from the County of Peterborough. But we also apply for provincial and federal grants. We receive, like, our biggest one we receive every year, it's called the Community Museum Operating Grant through the Canadian Museum Association. Most big museums or reputable museums that you hear about will be also receiving those grants. And then we also apply for one-off grants from, like, our regional tourism organization, or we even get private donations from people that are looking to help us out as well. So it really is... just like it's a community museum, it's a community of people that fund us, basically.
Welcome to The Carpenter Shop by William H. Hastie, who emigrated from Scotland in 1856. He came over here as what they call a Wainwright, which just means, Wain is an old English term, means cart or wagon, and Wright means maker, so cart maker. And he started up his business in 1856 as a cart maker. He made sleighs, same as the one outside. Wagons, carts, wagon wheels, as you can see.
And to further their commitment to being a community museum, King describes how Lang has adapted in an effort to try and tell the true history of the county, not just the story of settlers, but the story of the Indigenous peoples who were here before as well.
We were quite fortunate that we had an amazing staff and group of volunteers about 15 years ago who started talking about this before it was even really kind of popular or like the thing that was happening day to day everywhere. I always like to brag, like, we were featured in Canada's History magazine because we were the first museum around to do that. So what we did is we struck up a committee and we invited Curve Lake, Hiawatha, and Alderville all to come and talk to us about, okay, so pioneer villages tell this sort of one-sided story. Often it's the staff telling the story as they think it should be. You know, a classic line that I know that we've said at, like, we said at Lang for years before that was, you know, oh, they were friendly with, or, you know, they helped us out. And we really wanted to elaborate on that, but we also knew that it couldn't come from us. Like, we couldn't be the ones telling it.
And so the Lang Pioneer Village Museum invited the local First Nations communities to help them tell this story. Both Curve Lake First Nation and Hiawatha First Nation joined Lang as partners, providing representatives for a committee which they have named Obnobbin. King says that after a few years of research and collaboration, they created a site within the village to tell the First Nations story called Obnobbin Camp, set in 1825.
So the original agreement was that it would always be interpreted by someone who's a local Indigenous person, and that would be the story that was being told. And up until this year, we always had an interpreter from the local communities. And this year, we really struggled with finding somebody. We just weren't having any applicants. And so we came together as a group to talk about, well, what are we going to do? Because we didn't want to be... we didn't want to seem like, we didn't want to be the ones telling the story as if it was our story to tell. Like, that in the museum world is just clearly understood. You don't do that. I think you know that, actually, not even just the museum world, like the whole world knows that, or should know that, I should say. And so the reps from the Cultural Center in Curve Lake and our partner from Hiawatha as well, it was a difficult decision, but we decided that it was better to have someone rather than no one. And so they joined us on the hiring committee, and we did hire a settler descendant for that space this year. And we have a wonderful, wonderful student there. His name is Carter, and he's taking Indigenous Studies at Trent. And the ladies, as I say, were part of the hiring committee. And after we were done interviewing, we knew he was the one, because everything he said, he was really conscious to say, like, this isn't my story. You know, I'm just telling you what I've been told or what I've been taught.
Hi there.
How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Great. So welcome down to Abnabin. This is the Indigenous display at Lang, and it's representing the Mississaugi people. Everything that you're seeing would have been a part of their daily lives in the 1820s and before, minus that metal hanging thing. We have the rack over there that would be for cooking food, but that there's an actual artifact, so we can't use it.
Cool.
So at this table here, we have some of the sacred medicines that they would be using for smudging. It can also be used in different types of teas, one of which I'm making right now. I'm making a sacred blend of tea to give to some of the other pioneers here. So in that sacred blend of tea, there's sage, sweetgrass, cedar, and pine.
But part of the reason that Trent Radio visited this living history museum in the first place is that they have been nominated for this year's Top Small Museum Award with Attractions Ontario.
We've won it before. I should start by saying we've won it before. I was shocked that we were nominated again. So if I'm being really, like, the kind part of me wants to say, like, I will be so happy if someone else wins as well, right? Because I'm happy to share the love. But the, like, proud part of me is that we are so fortunate to have such an we have amazing staff and amazing volunteers. We hire 14 seasonal staff every year. Some of them are students, some of them are not. And we have about 175 volunteers that bring this place to life. And living history museums they're not as plentiful as they used to be. And sometimes there's even places that claim to be living history museums that, just because of pressures from funders and that sort of thing, they're not really living histories museums anymore. So I think part of the reason is that we're, like, it's pretty special here. I'm privy to everything that goes behind the scenes, so I know it takes a lot of work to make the magic happen. But when you're stepping in here not knowing about that, or just immersing yourself in a day in the 1800s, it can feel pretty magical. But really and truly, the simple answer is, I think it's because of our people. Mm-hmm. Like, our staff and volunteers are phenomenal.
And we visited each of the sites and buildings at Lang Pioneer Village Museum, getting to meet some of these staff and volunteers, dressed in authentic historical attire, as they went about their daily chores and jobs at places like the Blacksmith, the Print Shop, and the Keene Hotel.
Because this house actually wouldn't have had windows originally. So it would have been very dark inside.
Mm-hmm. Cool.
So yeah.
I'm going to take a peek in the house.
It was built in 1825 by David Fife. He was responsible for creating Red Fife wheat. So Red Fife wheat was innovative enough in the 1800s to get two types of wheat and create a new, hardier variety that would survive winter better.
Cool.
It's incredible.
You can find Lang Pioneer Village Museum at 104 Lang Road in Keene, Ontario, to transport yourself back to the 19th century and learn about the history and beginnings of what is now known as Peterborough County.
You have access to a mill. You would have to use a hand grinder like this one. The hand grinder would make our wheat here into flour. So,
and I'm just going to hit the head of this, flatten it out a little bit, and try to get a nice point on there as well.
This has been Eddie Sweeney, reporting for the Local Journalism Initiative here in Peterborough, Ngozuwinong.
Follow us on X at Frequency News. Listen to all our stories on frequencynews.ca.
D. Smithers Mountain Bike Association has been awarded a $350,000 grant to build a trail called Round the Lake. It's a 6-kilometer trail within the controlled recreation area of Hudson Bay Mountain Resort. The Smithers Mountain Bike Association, or SMBA, is a group of mountain bike enthusiasts that aim to keep Smithereens excited about exploring the Buckley Valley via biking trails. Construction of the Round the Lake Trail is currently underway and will be usable by next biking season. Plans for continuing the trail to Crater Lake are under review. Scannable signage at viewpoints along the route will allow users to access interesting information about the landmarks and history of the Buckley Valley. Pamela Hassan in Smithers, British Columbia, had a chat with Seth Van Varseveld. He's with the SMBA. He talks about the trail and future projects for it.
My name is Seth Van Varseveld, and I have been involved with the SMBA, the Mountain Bike Club, for 2 years now. I started as the trail director for a season, and then after that have been focusing on this project specifically, keeping the ball rolling on it. So this trail is called Round the Mountain, and it's a multi-use trail designed for hikers, runners, mountain bikers, and anyone else really, and non-motorized. It starts at the same spot that the current Crater Lake Trail does, but it cuts back across toward the east, contouring around the mountain to above the top of the chairlift, and then up onto the prairie from there in the Alpine. And it's been designed to have a low grade, smooth trail surface, so it'll be accessible for a lot of different trail users.
Could you tell me some of the history of how this trail was spearheaded?
Yeah. So there's a local trail builder in town called Brian Shorter, and back in 2010, he started investigating a vision he had of a trail that goes all the way around Hudson Bay Mountain, starting at the ski hill and coming out the Toboggan Creek Road near Twin Falls. Mm-hmm. And in 2016, they got some funding to have a master plan done. So a professional trail designer came out, and they walked around in the Alpine a ton and came up with this big grand master plan. And over the years since then, people have come along and tried to get it going, but it's a monster project. When I started as the trail director 2 years ago, I was another one of these people that was really excited about it. And I've been just trying to get some momentum, and we decided that this first section to Crater Lake is best to just focus on that for now. And that's our focus.
Yeah. So the big, large, I guess, white whale is still a trail circumventing the mountain, but for now, this is phase one, and this is also a great-looking new trail, too.
Yeah, it has a ton of value on its own, mm-hmm. Just having access to this beautiful area and allowing a wider range of users, and especially providing a more sustainable option as opposed to the current hiking trail, which is quite braided because it gets wet and people try to avoid the wet spots.
Okay.
Our trail is designed so that it won't be affected by water as much, so there won't be any need to leave the trail surface.
Does it actually go around all Crater Lake?
It'll just come down to the lake. It's an out and back trail. It doesn't go around the lake.
Okay. How long is the trail?
So the total proposed length of the trail, if we went all the way to Crater Lake, is 9.4 kilometers. Mm-hmm. Most of the trail is within the controlled recreation area of Hudson Bay Mountain Resort. We've been working closely with them, and they've provided the authorization for this part that we're building this season, and that section is about 6 kilometers long. Okay. The rest of the trail steps out of that controlled area, so we're currently in the process of getting approval for that, potentially building next season.
So the crew that you've hired to build the trail is from Kispiox, Noble Five Creek, that's correct?
Yes.
Why was it important to hire locally?
We're familiar with the work of Noble Five Creek from work they've done in Terrace, and they've done some work in the Alpine and Atlin as well. And the main trail builder for mountain biking on their crew, he's done work in the Alpine in Switzerland. And so, being local aside, they are just a high quality trail builder, and we trust their work. The advantage of them being local is that they're going to be riding it and they're not leaving. So they have a big interest in making it sustainable and high quality, because they're going to be around to see the fruits of their labor. The builder is just as excited about it as we are, and you can see in the quality of the work, it's looking really clean and high quality, and yeah, he knows he's going to be around to see the feedback, so it's looking really good. So by the end of this season, you'll see a certain portion of the trail built onto the prairie, and the pin flags were necessary for the planning process this season, but since the full length won't be built this year, we'll be removing those flags before the winter.
When is it proposed to be finished?
If the approval goes through, it would be finished next season, but there are a lot of unknowns still in that process.
So how is this project funded?
So we have a grant writer that works with us on the SMBA, and she did a great job of applying for a grant called the Destination Development Fund, and that's coming from the province of British Columbia. So we received $350,000 for that based on the merit of the high-quality alpine trail and what kind of tourism that could bring to town. And then we also received $50,000 from an anonymous donor who's excited about the trail as well.
Is that rare for the SMBA, or do you find you have a lot of kind of diehard mountain bikers that just really want to see it continue in this beautiful place?
We have a lot of businesses that sponsor us, which is really great, but the in that large of a sum, I'd say it's fairly rare,
So this trail, it's like this portion of the trail won't be done this year either, that's what you're saying?
The portion within the 6 kilometers within the CRA will be done this year.
Okay, cool. Thank you so much for speaking with me today, Seth. It was a really nice conversation.
Yeah, thanks for having me. It was great to share the news about this great new trail.
Questions or comments? Our email is radio@frequencynews.ca. radio@frequencynews.ca.
And to close this outdoorsy show, we met up with Jola Williner, a local 11-year-old artist who's participating once again in the 7th annual Skeena Stallman Art Festival. Jola says she began exploring art seriously 2 years ago when she was young, developing a distinctive style featuring wavy mountains. She enjoys using acrylics on canvas for their ease of use and ability to blend colors effectively. This year marks her second appearance at the festival, where she finds a joy in sharing her work with the community, including friends and family. Jola's artwork can be viewed at the Terrace Library's art gallery during the festival. Sabrina Spencer in Terrace, British Columbia has this for us.
Jola Williner, an 11-year-old artist in Terrace, has developed a passion for painting over the past 2 years. Inspired by her family and supported by her daycare teacher, Jen, Jola has already showcased her artwork in last year and this year's up-and-coming Skeena Salmon Art Festival. If I can get your name and position.
My name is Jola, and I'm in the Skeena Salmon Art Festival.
So can you tell us, how did you get interested in painting? Painting is your medium, right?
Yes. I was, I think about 2 years ago, I started, really getting into the art and everything. And if you look at my work, I never, I always have mountains in my art. And I never do it, straight up and down ever. I always have them wavy. So I always do that in my art.
So what do you enjoy most about creating art?
I enjoy most of the time mixing the different colors to make different shades and just making different shapes and then creating them into something.
And then what types of things inspire your artwork? Are there particular places, people, or things?
I have people that really inspire me. So my mom, my dad, my brother, and my dog. And then my daycare teacher, her name's Jen, and she's always helped me do art. So, yeah.
You mentioned that painting with acrylics on canvas. What do you enjoy about that?
I just enjoy acrylic on canvas because it's... For me, it's easier just to spread it all out because I only use a little bit of paint at a time because I know a little bit goes a long way.
And how has your artwork changed since you started painting? You said it's been 2 years, right?
Yeah, about that. My artwork has changed a lot because when I was 2 years ago, when I was like 9, if you like look at my art from then to now, it's like completely changed a lot by just the sky and like the mountains and like the water and everything. So,
and how cool is it that you got your first show? Is this your first show?
It's my second.
Is it really?
Yeah.
Wow. Good jobs. But still, how are you liking having your shows and everything at the Salmon Art Festival?
I like it. Last year, my grandparents came up and we went to the art gallery and I showed them my art and they really liked it. So, yeah, it's really fun to just have it in there and everything.
So do a lot of your friends like seeing your artwork at the gallery too?
Yeah, most of the time, like, a lot of my friends love art too, so they'll go to the art gallery and they'll see my art and they'll be like, they'll text me after and be like, oh, Jola, I saw your art there. And I was like, oh yeah, that's like nice. I put it in sometimes.
Nice. So how cool is it for you to share this with the community, especially during Riverboat Days?
I think it's pretty cool for other people to see the way that I work with art and everything. So I think it's nice for like Terrace and Thornhill to see what I do.
Actually, especially during Riverboat Days, we get so many visitors from all around BC who come here to see the Riverboat Days. So I'm sure there's more than Terrace and Thornhill that see your artwork.
Yeah.
So what things do you hope for yourself as an artist in the future?
I really hope that I can put in a lot more detail on my paintings, and I'm hoping that I can get a bit better at painting because my paintings are sometimes not the best, so I always have to redo them. So, yeah.
And then what would you say to any friends or other young people who want to get into artwork?
I'd say that art's always there for you. If you're feeling sad or happy or mad, you can always take, like, pencil crayons or paint or even a pencil and just draw or paint out what you feel.
So where, if anybody wants to see your artwork in the art show, where can they find it?
I'm pretty sure, and that's at the Terrace
library
downstairs in the art gallery.
All right. Thank you so much, and thank you for coming into the studio and talking with us. I appreciate that.
Thank you.
So I saw a preview of what you have coming in the art gallery, so I can't wait to see the rest, and congratulations.
Thank you so much.
For more information on dates and times, visit SkeenaSalmonArtsShow.com. This story is brought to you in partnership with the Local Journalism Initiative of Canada. You can see the full story at frequencynews.ca.
That's it for Viewpoints this week. Thanks for keeping us company. Share your summer with us, and we'll do the same with the audience. Write to us at radio@frequencynews.ca. Our address is radio@frequencynews.ca. Our journalists this week were Edward Sweeney, Pamela Hassan, and Sabrina Spencer. Our national editors, Maureen McEwen and Victoria Fenner. Viewpoints is brought to you by the Community Radio Fund of Canada with the help of your local radio station. I'm your host and producer, Boris Chassaigne. See you next week. Ciao.